Oh, there's nothing like homicide for the holidays.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tammy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Lee.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, the ethics of true crime. So we're going to thank Lee Ayers, the digital experience engineer at JMU in the Office of Digital Marketing, for requesting this as an episode. She's helped me a lot with the Gandhi Center website, so thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah, this is a listener-requested episode, so keep them coming, and thanks, Lee.
Thanks. All right, should we get this true crime party started?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
So, Tommy, what would you say are your top three true crime pieces ever, and why? And you can have an honorable mention if you can't narrow it down to like.
So I had to really think. I had to think about this for like several days, and I just like almost gave up. But I'm going to throw out a couple. True. Okay, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So for podcast, I'm going to say season two of Madeline Barron's In the Dark. This actually led to the release of Curtis Flowers, who was tried six times for a murder in Mississippi. The release came as a direct result of her investigative reporting during the podcast, and it includes his release in the so it follows this case.
I don't think I've heard of that podcast,
but it's great.
I do know Curtis Flowers because there's a Supreme Court case about jury racial bias and jury selection.
Part of what she uncovered during this, right? It should have been obvious, but her work on this is what actually helped lead to getting this moving.
Gotcha.
So for documentaries, there are simply too many to name. HBO, for example, makes great prestige true crime, but I'll pick two. Going with The Jinx, because it's considered one of the first great real crime documentaries, and it also features a hot mic convo that I won't spoil for listeners who haven't seen it.
Don't know that one.
Okay, you have to watch it. It's also HBO. And Murder on Middle Beach, which didn't get a lot of public attention, but is about a son who documents his investigation into his own mother's murder. But it's really also a larger meditation on grief.
My number three would be a podcast called Criminal.
Yes.
This is Criminal.
Yeah.
Great stories, like some of them are really interesting and unique and all kinds of different stories, and Phoebe Judge is a great host.
I feel like I'm always trying to mimic her voice. So
we'll do it. Let's do our best Phoebe Judge impression. You go first.
Okay. I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Criminal.
Criminal is produced by me, Lawrence Four, and Nadia Wilson. Okay. My number two would probably be Making a Murderer, Netflix documentary. I think that, you know, that was one of the ones that really kind of like popped true crime docs back into the public attention. Right. And also I teach ethics and criminal justice. And so there are lots of really good examples from that documentary that I refer to all the time.
Yeah. Was that 2015 class. When that came out?
Somewhere around
2017. I don't know. Those years are actually called like the years of the prestige true crime, because there were lots of like documentaries produced by HBO, which does a lot of prestige TV, and Netflix was also amping up their game.
And finally, my number one, it's The Eye of the Tiger, Tiger King. So it was like the first big pandemic fad.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it so much. It was probably the most entertaining thing that I've ever seen.
And we were all stuck at home with like the existential threat of a pandemic. So it was fun to watch.
But still, like just the craziest, most bonkers, insane people and things happening.
Yes.
And it like produced, you know, still like the greatest memes ever. When I was recording my online lectures, I would open with, "Hey there, all you cool cats and kittens."
Pandemic then, online lectures.
Yeah. And then another good one is the, you know, when one of the employees got attacked and got their arm ripped off, and, you know, Joe Exotic's first comment is, "I will never financially recover from this." Yes. And my favorite meme of that is like, you know, it has him saying that on there, and then on top it says, like, "My dad, when I turn the thermostat down 1 degree, I will never financially recover from this."
Oh, my God, I love that.
And then
that
when
one.
Joe gets attacked by the tiger himself, and he's on the, and he says, like, "You know, I called for help twice on the radio, and not a bleep you, or what do you need, or nothing."
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, when I run out of toilet paper in the bathroom.
Okay, I do have to say, though, that he was accused of animal abuse, which is not funny at all.
So we talked about Dahmer a lot last week. Did you watch that show? What are your thoughts on that?
No, I skipped it. I'm of the mind that we don't need another Dahmer story or another Bundy story. And also remember what my student said in class, mm-hmm. that she thought Dahmer mm-hmm. was hot. And I was like, oh, geez, mm-hmm. no, we just don't mm-hmm. need any more of these.
Yeah, well, I did watch it, and I really enjoyed it, but at the same time kind of found it, like, disturbing. So it was really a weird experience because I really liked it, but also it bothered me, too. Because, you know, as your student said, like, Evan Peters, he was really charismatic. He did a great job. But also that's maybe one of the problems because he, like, it was a scripted show and it was actors dramatizing the events. It wasn't a documentary. There was no kind of analysis or firsthand witnesses. And I feel like particularly in the middle, the show really kind of made you empathize with Dahmer. It presented him as like a kind of like a pathetic and a tragic character with all kinds of problems. But I mean, on the front end in the last two episodes, it did kind of show like how manipulative and how like a butthole he was, but still, like that middle chunk of episodes, I would watch them and then think about like, wow, this like really makes you like feel sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. For
and him. His so family members of the victims did speak out about the fact that one of that series and then another documentary about Dahmer came out about the same time. Mm-hmm. And they were not consulted. So they were upset about that.
And that's one of the problems that we'll talk about. But, you know, kind of the biggest issue with true crime in general is that it, you know, presents real crimes as entertainment.
Yes. So let's define true crime. What is it?
Well, as the name suggests, and I hate when students do that in papers, they'll be like, racial profiling is just what it sounds like when people are profiled by their race. Like, okay. But anyway, true crime is just like it sounds. It's crime that is true. Stories of crimes that are real, that really happened. They're not, you know, made up. Mm-hmm. In the first true crime fad is frequently identified as Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, which I know nothing about.
Yes.
I haven't. Have you read that?
But it was years and years ago.
Yeah, other than just that little factoid, I don't know much about
it. It's great storytelling. Mm-hmm. So it really introduced true crime as a storytelling kind of narrative.
Which is the second major aspect of true crime. It involves some secondary media examination of a totality of a crime.
Right.
So we frequently get obsessed with crimes like, you know, Jack the Ripper or OJ or Casey Anthony.
Yep.
But direct news coverage of the crime itself is not true crime. It has to be some kind of secondary, you know, piece with, you know, analysis, with edits. Somebody puts the story together.
Content creation, stylized storytelling. So it can be pretty entertaining, crazy crimes, oddball characters involved, insane twists and turns.
For sure. And, you know, like Tiger King, the more outlandish, the more outrageous, the better. But that's also one of the reasons that true crime is problematic. It presents real life, real pain as entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, we're drawn to true crime because it's true.
Yes.
The murder, the monster, the horror, it all really happened.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, true crime presents real life as crime stories, like a whodunit, eccentric cast of characters. It's kind of framed as like this mystery for the audience to solve.
Yes, correct.
In true crime has fandoms with communities in conventions like CrimeCon, which... two of your hosts actually have tickets to attend in the fall.
We do.
But I saw a quote in an article that said something like, you know, Star Wars and Marvel fandoms, those communities treat something that is fictional as real.
Right.
But true crime fandoms treat something that is very real like fiction.
Yes.
So true crime results in glorifying crime, sensationalizing violence, and we, the audience, are getting our kicks out of the suffering of other people, essentially.
Definitely.
So why do you think that is, Tommy? Why do you think we find crime and violence more broadly entertaining?
You know, morbid curiosity is a natural trait. So as humans, we're just kind of drawn to things that we can't know or understand or those kind of crazy stories. This is natural. But also we know from studies that women are the primary audience for true crime, which may be linked to our fear of victimization.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to experience these situations from the comfort of our homes, also providing us with a feeling of control. We also get to consider our own mortality and threats to it. But the true crime fandoms are much different.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think those are some of the same reasons why these crazier true crime fandoms.
Right. And there's a reason that true crime is often referred to as murder porn.
Yes. Yes.
It's smut. So you mentioned like the Oxygen shows.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the name of the one
earlier.
Who murdered one. Is it Snapped?
There's Snapped killer couples, like the names that are very kind of titillating and salacious. Southern Fried Homicide is another one.
Yes, yes.
Snapped killer couples. There's a podcast called My Favorite Murder,
which has a huge following.
Mm-hmm. I've never listened to that one, but the name kind of turns you off.
Yes.
Buried in the Backyard is another one.
Oh,
so these are kind of like the themed based murder porn show.
Right.
So the theme of Buried in the Backyard is bodies are found in unusual places.
Yes.
Another really interesting one is Homicide for the Holidays.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing like Homicide for the Holidays. And as you can imagine, those are about murders that take place on holidays.
Yes. We're part of the problem because we're laughing about these, I guess.
We're laughing at the names.
We're not laughing at the crimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
The names are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Okay, so reasons people watch true crime, we talked about women as the primary audience, like kind of our natural morbid curiosity. Mm-hmm. What else?
Well, in terms of, some of the big problems, we've kind of already hinted at this.
Yes.
That true crime can be pretty disrespectful to victims.
Yes.
So an important consideration of consuming true crime is how it affects victims and co-victims.
Right.
And co-victims would be those who are connected to the primary victim. So
yes.
Most true crime is about murder, so the person who is murdered would be the victim, and then you can think about like family members or close friends as like co-victims.
Yes.
So more careful true crime includes co-victims
and
is sensitive to their situation.
Right.
And I think Dateline is a good example of that, because frequently Dateline, frames the whole show from the perspective of the family. They talk about the victim, and it's not just like a token family member. They talk to, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, grandparents, sometimes aunts and uncles.
They're the focus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I discovered as a pattern is that if you see like the family members in photos on Dateline, the one that is left out, the one that's not interviewed, is usually the one who did it, because like they're in jail or prison. So a lot of times you could figure out here's the family, the husband is not
missing,
being interviewed, or the brother is not being interviewed. Why not? So anyway, tip there. True crime can also lead to secondary victims or victimizations, and that's when victims or co-victims feel exploited or preyed upon by the journalists, by the media, by true crime.
Right.
In Serial, season one is a good / bad example of this. So Heyman Lee, she was the young lady who was murdered.
Yes.
And the Lee family didn't want to participate in the documentary. They didn't want the exposure. They didn't want the trauma of reexamining the case. So season one of Serial really overlooks her and her family. And if you're not familiar, the point of season one Serial is basically to say that the Adnan Syed is not guilty of murdering, he's innocent.
Right, and that kicked off like this interest and proliferation of true crime podcasts, because Serial was so popular.
Yeah, and apparently the brother of the victim, posted a big statement on subreddit about the show, criticizing listeners for, getting entertained by this. And basically the quote that kind of stands out is he said, in all caps, to me, this is real life.
Right.
And he talks about the pain the family experienced, the trauma his mother went through in particular.
Yeah, they're not characters in a drama.
Right. And so you've got, a situation where, you have celebrities and filmmakers and podcasters making money and getting famous and winning awards from shows while victims are neglected and exploited.
Right.
So it can be really painful and exploitative for those who were involved or affected by it.
Yeah, and I think it's also different too for unsolved murders, because the family might participate because there's some hope that the exposure will bring resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And so the true crime entertainment industry may take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But also there's not just the direct victims and the victims' families or the secondary victims. We have what we call vicarious victimization, which is someone who's watching this who maybe was a previous victim of a crime. But it's not connected to the case in any way, is triggered by these true crime stories.
Right.
And this is an additional harm of the industry.
For sure. So, true crime can be exploitative and harmful to victims. And another problem is that it can often lead to inaccurate public perceptions.
Correct.
So even though true crime is true, it oftentimes leads to misinformation about crimes, victims, and the criminal justice system.
Yes.
Because you have to pick stories, you have to pick crimes that are rare, yes, unusual, mm-hmm, that are entertaining.
Salacious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So serial killers are rare, as we've talked about before in previous episodes, but they make the best true crime stories.
Yes.
So some of the big misperceptions that true crime create is that murder and serial murder are common,
yes,
things. And of course, we've talked about that before. That's not the
not
case
true
at all. Yeah. Particularly given the proliferation of true crime, that may lead people to believe that crime is increasing.
Correct.
Or that society is unsafe.
Yes.
And, you know, for the most part, over the last three decades, crime has been dramatically decreasing.
Right.
True crime serial killer documentaries in particular emphasize stranger victimization.
Yes.
That, you know, people are victimized by the creepy stranger. Although
right,
savvy consumers of true crime will know that the significant other or spouse is,
yes,
the most likely culprit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Always the partner.
Yeah.
First.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason why police start there. But mm-hmm, that's true for, you know, it's just more mm-hmm likely to be someone you know,
yeah,
for
mm-hmm
any victimization.
And true crime creates misinformation about victims.
Yes.
In true crime, victims are frequently middle-class white women.
Right.
Someone that, like, the majority can identify with. There's lots of true crime docs and stories about the case of the missing or murdered white woman. Yeah, and there's lots of these. JonBenet Ramsey, Madeleine McCann, Natalie Holloway, Gabby,
yes,
Petito more,
yes,
recently.
Yes, yes.
One strength of the Dahmer show, we've talked about the weaknesses, is that,
yes,
it did call attention to the fact that Dahmer's victims were young gay men of color, particularly,
yes,
you know, like, he preyed on people that society wouldn't miss, that,
correct,
society doesn't care about, that society is not super interested in getting justice for.
Correct.
And I know for years I knew who Dahmer was and what he did, but not much was, I didn't know about, like, particularly his victims were,
oh,
marginalized folks. So,
okay,
we're talking about, like,
yeah,
Dahmer, a serial killer who eats people, but
yeah,
not who those people,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
were. And then finally, true crime oftentimes presents the police as, like, fair, effective,
yes,
and efficient good guys who always get the bad guy and wrap everything up within an hour in a nice, neat, clean bow.
Right. I think some of the better true crime podcasts will introduce things like bias in mm-hmm policing and the criminal justice system. But I also want to mention that true crime TikTok is now a big thing, and it's an especially egregious in terms of the true crime community, because there are people who put on makeup. So the video will be them putting on makeup while they're talking about a case.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically giving you the details of a case, talking about someone's murder,
like makeup,
while they're putting on makeup.
Like dressing up as, like, a dead body, or
no,
are you just saying, like, putting
no,
lipstick
like your
on
daily, like, putting on your your makeup.
Like very flippant.
Yes, very flippant. Putting on makeup, talking about a case. Like, there are lots of videos dedicated to this in the true crime TikTok community. Also, false accusations are a problem. So in addition to, like, misperceptions about crime and justice, mm-hmm, the true crime community can be a problem in identifying mm-hmm someone mm-hmm that has nothing to do with mm-hmm the case. Like with the Idaho murders, which we just spoke about on the last episode,
mm-hmm,
there was a University of Idaho professor who was targeted by a psychic on TikTok and accused of being the murderer. She's actually filing a lawsuit because this woman made, like, 30 defamatory videos about her, and actually she, like, doubled mm-hmm down on it. She said, this has nothing to do with me.
Another thing to talk about is South Park, of course.
Yes.
There's an episode of South Park called Informative Murder Porn.
Yes.
And so basically all the boys' parents are, like, you know, in bed at their sexy time watching true crime. And the boys are concerned that the parents are going to watch this true crime and then end up killing. And that actually ends up happening. So, like, one of the parents ends up killing the other. And so the boys go to, like, the cable company, and they're trying to put, like, parental locks on the true crime channels. And
the writers of South Park are so clever.
Yeah.
And they just, like, zeitgeist. They just, they're so good.
But, you know, the point of bringing that up is that there's an element of true crime and crime media that could have an impact on, like, copycat, creating more crime or creating more criminal incidents, particularly for those people who, you know, are, like, driven by fame or notoriety, and
correct,
crime might be one way to get that. So I'm thinking particularly of the documentary Don't F With Cats.
Yes, we can't say it because this is a clean podcast, but...
And they even, like, bleep that out.
Yeah, they
bleep
that out
on
Netflix.
Yeah. But that would definitely be one of my honorable mentions.
Yes, mine as well.
Yeah, the documentary follows several web sleuths as they try to identify the identity of a person who posted videos of him killing kittens online. Yeah. And eventually they identify this guy, Luca Magnotta, who, again, was like, you know, posting these videos for outrage, for shock.
Right.
And he, you know, kind of ended up in this, like, this cat and mouse game where he was toying with the sleuths and, you know, keep posting videos and clues, and they were trying to find out who he was. And eventually he filmed himself killing a person.
Yes.
And posted that online, Chinese international student Jun Lin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the, you know, kind of details, the closing reflection is from the web sleuths, and they, you know, kind of talk about, like, did we contribute to this crime by giving him attention, by feeding his desire for fame and thrill seeking, and by chasing him? Did we encourage him to escalate? And what responsibility did we share for this crime? In that documentary, they did not interview the perpetrator.
Thankfully.
And I saw an interview with the director, and he said, like, they never seriously considered it. Like, he's so fame-driven.
Yes.
They didn't want to give him attention, so that's why they focused and framed it around, like, the web sleuths.
Right.
But I'm also thinking about Joe Exotic, or as I like to call him, Joe Erotic, who also was, like, you know, a total narcissist.
Oh, he loved it. Yeah.
Fame-driven attention.
Yes.
You know, I've seen him after the documentary, like, giving interviews from prison.
Yes.
To all kinds of news outlets. And I've seen mixed statements about whether he has actually watched the documentary. Some, you know, some places say he has, and some places say he can't get access to Netflix in jail.
Right,
so
right.
I don't know if he's actually seen it or not. I've seen mixed accounts on that. But
he does know the attention that came with it.
He's definitely loving the fame.
Yes.
And the attention that he received from that.
Yes.
And we've talked before about this kind of being the element of many mass shootings.
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, there's a contagion copycat effect for mass violence. In order to minimize that impact, scholars such as my friend Eric Madfus argues that news organizations should follow kind of like similar guidelines for reporting on mass murder as they do with suicide to limit the contagion effect.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you're limiting the details that are problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So the don't name them, don't show them campaign is exactly that. You're basically asking news outlets, when there's a mass murder, reduce your complicity in sensationalizing these killers by not showing their photos, especially in like power stances with camo and an AR-15, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a problem because then somebody inspires to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't name them, don't put their name out there. And so it's caught on with some news organizations, but anytime there's, you know, a mass shooting, you will see some news organizations will not do that and will report very specific details. But then there are some who will say the Sandy Hook shooter, but will never name the person. So it has caught on it a little bit.
You know, as we've intimated, there are good examples of true crime. It's not all bad.
Right.
Some better than others.
Yeah, I tend to like the stories where they're like there's a point, right? Like they're trying to free someone like Curtis Flowers or bring some light to issues.
So journalism scholar Lindsay Sherrill, she studied true crime and did a TED Talk about, you know, four questions to ask yourself regarding whether you're an ethical true crime fan or not. And I've linked that TED Talk in the show notes.
Yeah, maybe I'll post this in a couple Reddit threads.
Yeah, good idea. But anyway, four questions. Number one, why am I interested in this?
Yes.
So people can enjoy true crime for a sense of community, an interest in justice, empowering victims. But as we've talked about, if we're attracted by the, you know, gory details, the horror, the humor, we might want to take another look. So murder, crime is not a punchline.
Yeah.
The titles of true crime might be, but murder and crime itself is not.
Definitely not.
Number two, how does this make me feel?
Yeah.
So if you are drawn to true crime for hedonic motivations and hedonism, pleasure, so that would be those feelings that are, you know, pleasure, excitement, but not very meaningful.
Right.
That could be
I mean, I think there's some level of thrill-seeking with liking this stuff, even for us. Like, we like horror films,
yeah,
and that's
absolutely
a thrill-seeking, but that's different than what we're talking about here.
For sure. You know, on the other hand, if it makes you feel, you know, kind of empowered or motivated or educated, that can be good, positive true crime.
Yeah.
Number three, and this is a big one that we've talked a lot about, how might the people involved in the crime feel about the story and about this piece of media? And I mentioned the Lee's family opposition to Serial and how they feel they were exploited. But again, this is another reminder that true crime is not a murder mystery. It's not a whodunit. There are real people involved and affected.
Yeah.
And then finally, I think this is my favorite one. Am I motivated to act? So does it make me want to do something, to donate, to inform other people, to tell people about, you know, the problems in the system?
But not become a vigilante.
Yeah, no.
Advocate. That's not what we're talking about by motivated to act.
I'm not going to put on my pajamas and my Batman mask and go and...
Yeah, or harass people online. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Yep. So am I motivated to act? So to wrap things up, it's not to say that true crime is bad, but that we should definitely be more careful consumers about it. We should be reflective.
Right.
We should recognize the suffering of others and be careful about using that pain and that suffering for our own entertainment.
Yes.
All right. Well, then to close the show, it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from today's episode. So, Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
Yes, I would like to say and remind folks, because some of you already know, that TikTok is not a good source for anything, especially true crime. Mm-hmm. And leave that professor alone.
Yeah, big time.
Ben, what's your spin?
So, remember those little sayings we used to hear when we were kids, like, I'm rubber and you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you.
Yes.
Or sticks and stones. Anyway, one that I really liked was like when you point your finger at somebody else, you've got three pointed right back at
you.
Oh,
that's good.
So my spin or my takeaway is for me to encourage myself to be more reflective of my true crime habits in my taste and in general, but certainly on this podcast, to avoid the temptation to be sensationalistic or gratuitous. And I admit fully I have a morbid sense of humor, and like I said, you know, we laugh and we joke, but we're not laughing at, you know, murder. We're not laughing at the pain of a victim.
Right.
We try to keep things lighthearted, but still being educational and taking justice seriously.
This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU, which relies on support from generous donors like yourselves. If you would like to throw a few bucks to the Gandhi Center to support our educational programming, please click on the link in our show notes. Send justice topic suggestions via DM on IG at Gandhi Center JMU, or you can tweet at us or DM us on Twitter at Just A Minute Pod.